From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, local governments and schools say they're struggling over a property tax cap. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on Donald Trump and the New York presidential primary. And a state senator from the Hudson Valley is calling for the funding of full-day kindergarten across New York. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Local governments and schools say they're struggling over a property tax cap that will allow what amounts to a 0% increase in tax levies in the coming year. But Governor Cuomo says they'll likely have to stick with those rules. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Mayors at their annual meeting expressed concern about the near 0% tax cap, where they questioned the Senate Majority Leader John Flanagan. They asked him whether he'd be open to making changes to allow tax levies to rise. When the tax cap was enacted in 2011, the limits were 2% per year or the rate of inflation, whichever is less. But the inflation rate is so low this year that the growth rate for the cap is 0.1.2%. Flanagan, a Republican, answered that even some of his GOP senators are growing concerned.
We have some members who feel there should be no changes to the tax cap. We have some members who feel that it should be a straight 2%. We have some members that feel if it's inflation is less than 2%, that it should never be less than 1% overall. So there's a mixed bag of ideas.
School districts are also worried. Michael Borges with the Association of School Business Officials says the costs that face schools are mainly related to payroll and other personal expenses. They are rising much higher than the Consumer Price Index, or CPI. That's calculated by pricing a market basket of consumer goods.
We spend the bulk of our money on pensions and health care and special ed services, which are not in the basket of items or products that constitute the CPI.
Many Assembly Democrats also think the cap is too low. Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie says he'd like to see a straight 2% per year tax cap.
We'd like it to be a true 2% tax cap. It would accomplish two things. We want to constrain property taxes, but it would also give the localities the ability to deal with rising expenses and mandates that they have to cover.
But Hastie says it's not likely to become part of the budget this year. Governor Cuomo agrees. He's against making changes. The governor says the whole point of the cap is to make it more difficult to raise taxes.
These local governments have been on automatic pilot raising taxes year after year. And it was just they went to the taxpayer's pocket the way they go to a piggy bank. And you are literally chasing people from the state.
Cuomo says local government leaders do have the power to override the cap under the rules if a 60% supermajority of the members of a city council, town board, or county legislature agree to override it. He says in many localities, one party is dominant and could engineer a vote. He says they just don't want to.
Politically, they don't want to override the 2%, right? It's become a good housekeeping seal for budgetary diligence.
There is one way that lawmakers could act to bail out local governments and schools without changing the terms of the tax cap. Borges, with the school business official, says the legislature could make up the difference with more state aid. He says, after all, New York is running a surplus.
Asking for significant changes to the tax cap this year are going to be problematic, which is why I think it's the legislature's the easier path it would be to increase school aid accordingly.
Local governments squeezed by the tax cap are not likely to make up any revenues from sales taxes. A report by the state controller this week finds that 30 of the 57 counties outside of New York City saw a decline in sales tax in 2015. Reasons could include a weaker-than-average holiday shopping season and more people making purchases on the Internet. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, the presidential race certainly hitting New York this week, Alan, as Governor Cuomo held a fundraiser for Hillary Clinton, I believe somewhere around a $50,000, a bundled $50,000 dinner, with a conversation with Hillary Clinton, Andrew Cuomo as the host. I believe we heard even Bill de Blasio was there.
$50,000. Can you imagine? That's got to be some piece of steak. No, but as you point out, that's bundled, meaning you're not allowed to give that much, but you can get others to give, and then you put it all together. And what do you have, as they used to say in Cinderella? Bippity-boppity-boo. So there's your $50,000. So anyway, that's a lot of money, and nobody gives you $50,000 who doesn't want something back for it. Come on. Oh, yes, well, Alan, people want good government, and that's why they're giving $50,000. Yeah, right, in your dreams. You know, it's the best democracy money can buy, and that's what it's all about. So, your question, David?
Well, New York certainly has had a little bit of a controversy when it comes to endorsing Hillary Clinton and Bill de Blasio and him sort of taking a back seat now.
Well, now, you know, de Blasio was supposed to be loyal to the Clintons. He was supposed to be loyal to Cuomo. That's where this big fight got going. We had a wonderful conversation with the best of the newsmen, Ken Lovett, this week, in which he points out that de Blasio waited too long to endorse Hillary. They were furious about it, the Clinton people. Then he said he was going to go out and campaign for her out in Iowa. They say, no, stay home, basically. So he went out and he did what an intern would have done, knocking on doors, sort of doing penance in the snow, as a very famous English king once did, having ticked off the Pope. And you better believe that he's in real trouble, de Blasio, with the Clintons. So Andrew Cuomo has been for Hillary right from the beginning, told me a long time ago that Hillary would be the candidate, that she would be president for 8 years, and I'm sure that has dissuaded him from his own presidential ambition, at least for a while.
Meantime, Hillary Clinton, as Bernie Sanders did before her, met with Al Sharpton as she approaches the vote in South Carolina.
Well, Sharpton is a kingmaker. As you know, Sanders came and he talked to Sharpton in one of the most famous restaurants, Sylvia's, in New York City. And now Hillary comes and does her talk with Sharpton. We'll see. But all I know is that Bill Clinton was often referred to by many black leaders as the first black president because he was perceived as having done so much. Bernie Sanders has an economic message which is sure to help those people who are most downtrodden in this country. So it's not that easy, remembering that Al Sharpton himself has a show on MSNBC which sort of tilts left, except for that Scarborough person in the morning. And, you know, he has to watch how he's being perceived, whether he's being perceived as establishment or himself tilting left.
Tom Precious of the Buffalo News wrote a story this week, Alan. It has to do with the governor's race.
Yes.
Talking about how five Republicans are already in the race. So Westchester County Executive Rob Astorino, Buffalo real estate developer Carl Palladino, Dutchess County Executive Marcus Molinaro, Harry J. Wilson, who nearly defeated Tom DiNapoli for state controller in 2010, and Chris Gibson, a three-term congressman from Columbia County and a retired Army colonel. You've talked to at least four out of the five of these folks over your time. What do you make of the race?
Well, right now, one would have to put the money on Astorino. The reason for that is that Astorino has collected a lot of money for another run against Andrew. Now, it's going to be a while before it happens, but it does seem in my conversations, if my inner ear is correct, that the party brass really does want Astorino. Gibson, of course, is a man of great intellect, colonel, led troops, West Point, PhD, brilliant man. I've talked to him many, many times, and he's working hard at it. But he's got an uphill trudge to make it happen. He's also got to worry, David, about his feelings about women's reproductive rights. This is going to be a tough one for him. He's made it quite clear that Roe versus Wade is established law. But that is one of those outs that you can't do anymore. You got to say, I'm really for. And it's been pointed out that on a couple of occasions he has voted for some of the anti-Planned Parenthood bills that have been in the United States Congress. So I would say Astorino and Gibson are the two biggies. Palladino has a great deal of personal money, and he can pay for his own campaign. He's done it before. He's seen as a bit of a buffoon by many, so he'll have to show something that'll get everybody outside the Buffalo area to get on board.
Someone else who's also been described as a buffoon is Donald Trump. You and Ken Lovett were talking about how he may be in play in New York.
Oh, I don't think there's any question. You know, Trump has a tremendous appeal, David, to those people who are looking for somebody outside the same old group. And Trump is a marketing genius. He knows how to put himself across. He has fooled a lot of us. He has proven himself to be an effective vote getter. Or as the old saying goes, he was on TV. And TV is the great legitimizer of human beings in the society. So right now, it's going to be tough to say no to him for the Republicans. They desperately don't want him. But if they gang up on him, there's always the possibility he'll run as a third-party candidate and he'll cook them.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Charton. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Two upstate New York congressmen are on opposite sides of the aisle. Two upstate New York congressmen who are on opposite sides of the aisle met in Latham in New York's Capital Region this week to tour the Plug Power facility. As the Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports, the two are promoting a tax credit.
Congressman Paul Tonko and Chris Gibson were given a full tour of the company's manufacturing operation. Plug Power CEO Andy Marsh says the firm leads New York State and the nation in hydrogen and fuel cell system development and manufacturing.
Last year, we increased our revenue by 50%, did over $100 million in revenue, $200 million in bookings, and we'll do $150 million in revenue this year, growing again by 50%. As well as building 25 hydrogen fueling stations. We're delivering more hydrogen to electric vehicles than anyone in the world.
The company has grown from 87 to 300 employees in about 5 years' time. Speaking to employees, Tonko vowed to work to get the federal investment tax credit for fuel cell purchases set to expire at the end of the year to be extended.
We can't come to the table handicapped by the fact that we don't have the opportunity of the tax credit. So we're here today to share with you that we're partners with you, but mostly we're here to hear your stories, to witness your pride, to thank you for your commitment so that this is all a strong company that then becomes the strong argument to advance the investment tax credit policy.
Tonko and Gibson appeared together at Plug Power 5 years ago and were pleased to see the progress the company has made. Here's Gibson.
We don't take it for granted. We're very grateful for your hard work and the positive contributions that you make, not only to our economy, and clearly it is important to our economy, but I would argue it's actually important to our foreign policy, too. As somebody who spent 4 tours in the Middle East, you know, I want to see us, you know, get out of that business. I want us to be energy independent.
The two-man congressional tour comes 2 weeks after the plant rolled the red carpet out for U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer, where he vowed to rally Senate support for the investment tax credit, which he proclaimed to be a critical stimulus for the company's success.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Bombardier, a global manufacturer of rail cars and airplanes, plans to cut approximately 7,000 jobs, about 10% of its global workforce, over 2 years, while it adds jobs in growing areas of its business. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley takes a look now at what it might mean for New York.
As Bombardier released its fourth quarter and year-end report for 2015 on Wednesday, it included plans to optimize its global workforce with both job cuts and new hiring in strategic areas. The company will cut 7,000 production and non-production employees, including 2,000 contractors. Broken down by sector, Bombardier will eliminate 2,500 jobs in aerostructures and engineering services. 1,300 jobs will be lost in the product development, engineering, aerospace, and the business aircraft division. 3,200 jobs will be cut in Bombardier's transportation or rail division. Most of the impacted jobs are based in Canada and Europe. The company operates a railcar manufacturing plant in Plattsburgh. Bombardier Transportation U.S. spokesperson Marianne Roberts reports the New York plant is not affected by the layoffs.
The good news is that today's announcement has no impact on the manufacturing activities at our Plattsburgh site. Our plans for Plattsburgh for the year remain unchanged, and they include ramping up production and increasing employment levels for orders for San Francisco BART and New York City Transit. And there are other opportunities we're actively pursuing in the U.S.
Plattsburgh North Country Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Gary Douglas says he remained confident that Bombardier's Plattsburgh plant would not be impacted due to its success in obtaining contracts.
It actually reflects, I think, in part, the strength of our transportation equipment cluster in the Plattsburgh North Country area, and the fact that at least at Plattsburgh, there is every reason to believe that not only will there be no layoffs by Bombardier, you know, out of this global number, but in fact, they continue to anticipate over the course of this year adding numbers there as BART and other contracts start to ramp up in the plant.
McGill University Associate Professor Carl Moore says there are three good reasons for Bombardier to adjust its workforce.
The C-Series is now in production, and so all those engineers are developing, or most of them, no longer are needed. The second thing, there's a drop in demand for the business jets from Russia, Brazil, China, the Middle East, so that they need to make fewer planes, hence they need fewer people. And the third reason is because they're doing a transformation under the newish CEO.
Montreal Gazette business columnist Peter Hatikl says the job restructuring confirms that Bombardier has been struggling in all its divisions, including its European rail manufacturing.
Investors think that this company is spread far too thin and not really focused enough to satisfy them. It's also confirmation that the rail business in particular has never really been a moneymaker. They're number one in a lot of categories in that business, and it's very heavily centered in Europe. While they get a lot of contracts, they can't seem to squeeze a profit out of them. So that's been an ongoing problem.
Bombardier reports that it had 70,900 employees worldwide at the end of 2015. The reductions will occur throughout 2016 and 2017.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. A state senator from New York's Hudson Valley is calling for the funding of full-day kindergarten across the state, proposing the money come from the state lottery. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn.
State Senator David Carlucci, an independent Democrat from Rockland County, says every school district in New York should provide full-day kindergarten.
We have to have full-day kindergarten for every child in New York State, no matter where you live, no matter how much money your family has.
Carlucci has sponsored a bill to fund it.
Take the funds from the New York State Lotto that go unclaimed and earmark that for a kindergarten conversion fund. Allow for those districts that have half-day kindergarten to bring them up to full day. Allow those districts that have no kindergarten to bring them up to a full-day program. and more than that, safeguard the school districts that already have full-day kindergarten.
He says there are some $60 million annually in lapsed or forfeited lottery prizes. Lottery winners have 1 year to claim their winnings. Unclaimed winnings then return to the state lottery system, going toward advertising and promotions. Again, Carlucci.
Now, education is supposed to be the benefit of the lotto. The lotto was sold to us as a way to fund education. The funds that are left unclaimed, they belong to our students.
Carlucci says he expects opposition from officials with the New York State Lottery, which is regulated by the State Gaming Commission. A spokesman for the New York State Gaming Commission declined to comment, saying the commission does not comment on legislative issues. One supporter is NYSET, or the New York State United Teachers. Carl Korn is spokesman.
Well, we know that the best way to close the achievement gap is to stop the achievement gap from opening in the first place. Full-day kindergarten should be mandatory in New York State, and we should fund it to ensure that every five-year-old begins their school career on the right foot and is exposed to the ideas and the concepts that are needed so that they can be successful in first and second and third grade and all the way up the line until college.
Carlucci says more than 30 school districts could benefit from new funds that would cover capital expenses for kindergarten program expansion. He says there is no such bill in the Assembly, though he is working to find a sponsor there. Carlucci says his priority is to try another route.
My first strategy right now is to get this done in the New York State budget. I think we have a good opportunity to do that. It's a way that we can have this revolving fund that's there every year to safeguard kindergarten. So the first step is try to get it done in the budget. If that doesn't happen, then we'll try to pass it individually and get it signed into law by the governor.
Another supporter hails from Carlucci's district, the North Rockland Full-Day Kindergarten Advocates. At the end of December, they created a GoFundMe campaign, saying donations would help spread the word and make it a reality in the North Rockland School District. So far, the group has raised $600 toward their $2,016 goal through this online effort. Carlucci and Independent Democratic Conference leader Jeff Klein say full-day kindergarten is an issue championed in the Splinter Caucus's 2020 agenda.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1608, or just listen on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time. For more news on New York State government and politics, for the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.